coming up on this edition of Open Source.
What we're most concerned about, what keeps us up at night, are the areas that aren't seeing investment, that people are still very committed to live in. They have community roots, they have churches, they have family, they have their community within certain neighborhoods. And I'm concerned about investments across the city.
Coming up on Open Source, Tahira Ziegler on investing in one of America's great urban cities. Next. This is Open Source, and I'm your host, Tony Motley. My guest is Tahira Ziegler. She's the Executive Director of the Detroit Local Initiative Support Corporation, better known as LISC. In the face of the global coronavirus pandemic, the city of Detroit will be looking at leadership and investment to spark another comeback. Ms. Ziegler is here to offer her perspective. Tahira Ziegler, welcome to Open Source.
Well, thank you so much, Tony, for having me, for the invitation and the opportunities speak to your listeners. We greatly appreciate this time. We are we at LISC have been working in Detroit for about 30 years on the revitalization, and a lot of our focus has been in neighborhoods. So we have invested in people and place. We've invested about $250 million into neighborhoods, and we see a leverage of that of about 3 times of total development cost. So we're at about $1.3 million in terms of supporting and leveraging public and private investment into neighborhoods. And that looks a little different for each neighborhood, depending on what the assets are within a neighborhood. And the assets in our mind are not just real estate, but they're the people. How people are organizing within a neighborhood to really have voice to give to investors on what they want to see in their neighborhoods. So we've always been a community-based, supporting kind of intermediary. We're a community development financial institution, so we actually garner resources from our national office. We have about 35 offices across the country, and have invested about $20 billion across the country in those locations. And for Detroit, which is very special to the LISC network, that has really impacted, and you'll see social investment from us in low-income housing tax credits, in grants for nonprofits to pay for staffing, whether it's their executive director, all the way down to maybe their community outreach staff person who's really on the boots on the ground, getting the work and the word out for resources, bringing capital to lots of different stakeholders within the neighborhood. So about 3 years ago, we took a journey and we ventured a bit away from our Building Sustainable Communities, which was a place-based model where we designated through a process, an RFP process, 5 neighborhoods of investment. And those neighborhoods were Southwest. There were 2 neighborhoods in Southwest, Springwells Village and Corktown, the Michigan Avenue area, along with Grandmont Rosedale, Osborne neighborhood, and the North End. Those were neighborhoods that we were really interested in seeing what kinds of investments we could bring, because there were other entities and organizations, whether they're corporate or private, philanthropic dollars coming into these particular neighborhoods. There is a lot of federal dollars coming into these neighborhoods. So how can LISC, because we are a partner, but we're not necessarily a huge, big partner, but how can we bring our scarce resources and really complement the work that's really happening? So we transitioned a bit. We invested about $37 million across city into those 5 neighborhoods. And then we made a little bit of a shift and we saw the market really needed to change in terms of the way we're investing. And we took up a strategy called the Equitable Impact Investment Fund. And we started that work in 2000 and around 2017, we made that transition.
When you talk all these numbers, and what would Detroit be like? And I guess for people that live in a city or live in an urban area, like a Detroit or Philadelphia, Cincinnati, any of these places, how does Detroit compare to other urban centers in America?
Oh, sure. So knowing the history of Detroit and the disinvestment that we've had, really, you know, I'll just speak to the 50 years of disinvestment, we're in a position as we compare ourselves to Philadelphia, Cleveland, Cincinnati, we're considered a legacy city, which means that it's a city that is a manufacturing city that has seen a lot of transition and transformation, but at a very slow pace than what you will see on the coast, say in New York City or the West Coast in LA or San Diego area. You're going to see a lot more density in those particular cities and a lot more tax base. What you see in Detroit, as many folks already know, is a decline in the tax base, a transition of people flight, whether it was white flight or black flight in terms of middle class African Americans moving out of the city. All of those things, along with manufacturing jobs decreasing. And then we've also endured foreclosures, whether it was mortgage foreclosure or tax property foreclosure. So you're seeing a lot of disinvestment related to the schools. And so we're in a very unique position in terms of what how we compare to other cities. We have very high poverty rates. We're at 40% poverty. And you're going to see more of that, you know, based on the COVID crisis, especially with Detroit being a hot spot. So we want to make sure that we shore up the investments that we have made into Detroit and that we support the people, the small businesses, and other type of stakeholders that are really trying to hold on as we go through this crisis together to make sure that they don't lose their real estate investments or their for affordable housing for homeless and veterans and families, and all of the small businesses that really support residents as they are shopping and also being able to work near where you work or where you live, excuse me. So it's a very complex problem, and Detroit has a lot of layers to it. So I would just start there to say that we can't really compare ourselves to others because we've had such disinvestment. But the good thing is that provides some opportunity for us. And
what about getting people that are Detroit residents, and a lot of longtime Detroit residents, and of course everybody's not equipped to be a business owner, but there are opportunities, I think, for small businesses to happen in Detroit because there's a dearth of so many different entities that are needed. Is there, and this may not fall under your purview, but what's the plan to get people in the community in business and create opportunities for them so they don't have to, because transportation is an issue. So is there a plan for that?
Yeah, I think for us, with our equitable approach here over the next 3 years, what we're planning to do and what we want to do is raise enough funds locally and nationally to support small business and amenities for neighborhoods. And what that means is we would invest 50% of resources into affordable housing. And we're doing that with the Affordable Housing Fund with the City of Detroit. And that's providing many property owners the opportunity to recapitalize and reinvest in their properties and improve the quality of the units that are available within our market, within the city. And providing tenants access to those properties so they can make sure that people aren't getting displaced.
I mean, I know it's challenging, too, for you all. I mean, it's not, because it's different from a lot of other places, and the return on investment for people that want to get involved and support initiatives in Detroit, it's a little different than other places too. That increases the challenge, I think.
It does. And what it means is we have to provide as a community of stakeholders with resources, more subsidies to support small businesses so they get a step up in order to move what we call from the power of the basement into the corridors and retail spaces within neighborhoods. So they're more visible, they're accessible, and that people are able to come and frequent and actually move the economy in terms of money through neighborhood businesses. So we have a product called the Kiva loan product, which is a crowdsourcing kind of platform where a small business that is in someone's home could raise some funds from family members, relatives, kind of investors, even as low as $25 per investor. And they would collect those investments and apply through Kiva online to actually be able to get a matching loan for that particular product. So we have so far invested in 20 businesses over the last 12 months. And our goal is to invest in 120 more businesses, even through this COVID crisis, 120 more businesses, and bring them online over the next 3 years. So that's about an investment.
Is that enough money? Is that enough money? I'm looking at the note. It says $10,000. Mm-hmm. Is that significant money, or do they need
You'd be surprised. That is great seed money to get businesses through a growth plan of really putting pen to paper and getting a business plan together. And once they get the Kiva loan and they've paid it back, they're able then to move on to a bank and get investment. So as their business is growing, we're able to support them to have the credit so that they are eligible for other kinds of resources, whether it's in small business administration loan, whether it's an entrepreneurs of color kind of loan. So there are a number of resources within Detroit that we're building a pathway for those emerging startup businesses.
You have been at this for a while. And I wonder, for someone like yourself, do you see progress, or and how do you avoid just being overwhelmed?
Sure. Well, we've been doing this work 30 years in Detroit, and some of our team has been in place for the LISC office for about 20 years. So they've seen a lot of investment. I've been here working in Detroit, Detroit native, but raised outside of Detroit. I'm coming back to Detroit as a daughter of Detroit, and I've been here about 10 years. And what I've seen in terms of revitalization within 10 years, we've made some great leaps and bounds in terms of certain areas of the city have seen investment. What we're most concerned about, what keeps us up at night, are the areas that aren't seeing investment, that people are still very committed to live in. They have community roots, they have churches, they have family, they have their community within certain neighborhoods. And I'm concerned about investments across the city in terms of market values increasing. So that's the challenge, and that's what's keeping us up, and that's what's keeping us committed to this work for another 30 years. Hopefully it doesn't take us that long to get Detroit turning the corner, but you have an investment from our LISC office in New York to this work, and it takes a long time to see progress. Sometimes projects take 2 or more years. Sometimes programs take a year or so to get launched. And so we're here for the long haul for Detroiters. The other thing we're committed to is providing capital to homeowners. So homeowners that want to reinvest in their own properties as part of the revitalization are able to do that through our 0% home repair program with the City of Detroit, Bank of America. There's quite a few partners. Quicken is also at the table, along with Opportunity Resource Fund. We've got 12 intake centers across the city. We have One Detroit at the table. It takes a lot of collaboration. And what LISC is trying to do is make sure that we're at the table, convening, bringing unique programs to Detroit for the market. So far, we've been able to help about 500 homeowners. And through our work with the city, we're working on trying to get some relief for those homeowners for their particular loans. And we're working to, I think, customize, even as we come up with programs, they may need to change according to how the market is changing. And so COVID is changing a lot for our work. And it probably will, for the next couple of years, have impact. So I think, you know, as we think about investments and we think about properties that have been invested in, apartment buildings, charter schools, and health centers, we also need to think about everybody else who's a homeowner or a tenant. How do they get access to capital and get on this pathway for economic mobility?
That's outstanding. What do you, if I flew to Detroit and I said, Tahira, I've heard about your work, take me somewhere that gives me an example. Where would you take me?
Sure. Well, we definitely would take you to Southwest Detroit, where very diverse neighborhood has quite a few low-income housing tax credit projects within that particular area. It's a big neighborhood. We've invested probably about $35 million in that particular neighborhood alone, just on housing. And we take you there also to show you a couple of investments we made with health clinics, the CAS Health Clinic, the Southwest Solutions Health Clinic, and that building that they're headquartered in. We'd show you the diversity of investment, speaking about the low-income housing tax credits and the units that we've brought on. We've brought on probably around 6,300 affordable housing units across the city, and a lot of them are in Southwest Detroit, downtown, and midtown, and the North End. So we take you to the corner, which is a more of a luxury investment in terms of apartments. And we were very committed to make sure that some of those apartments were affordable, and that it's also connected to the PAL League, where we've invested in the football field that is the former Tiger historic site. So our investments really are comprehensive. You're going to see a variety and diversity of investments. We've invested in, just to give an example of some other projects, we did invest new market tax credits in a small amount, about $5 million, into the rail to ensure that development that's happening on both sides of Woodward would really support keeping existing residents in their particular units. We've invested in the Dexa School, which is in Eastern Market, the charter school that's had, I believe, their fifth year of students go on to college. It's a 96% kind of rate in terms of those folks going to higher education. We've invested in 15,000 families across the city related to our Centers for Working Families, which is our partnership with United Way. And that's helping people on the pathway to new jobs, or retraining them, or getting them a checking account, or signing them up for resources to open a business or send a child to college. So I think what's always confusing, and it's a great thing about lists is we can invest in so many things, and we see the impacts every day with the stories. You know, homeowners that didn't have access to capital for home improvements and had leaking roofs for 5 years, where every time it rained, they pulled out their pots and buckets, and then they're able to get a roof, which they wouldn't be able to get without the 0% program. So I think hearing those type of stories about Detroiters and how they're getting connected to jobs and how they're getting connected to access to resources is why we do this work. And it is, it's very rewarding to be a part of the revitalization of Detroit. We're very interested to see kind of how we can play a role with the COVID crisis, how we can support small businesses that maybe are, really trying to figure out if they can sustain themselves through the safe home kind of mandate. We've got a few products that I'm hoping that folks will go to our website to see, and that's at www.detroitlists.org. And you'll find a number of resources that are for everyone, the homeowner, a tenant, a small business, or even a developer thinking about how to bring more units online for affordable housing. So
you've been doing it, and your list of accomplishments that you just laid out was impressive. If you, in an ideal world, had a magic wand or some way to make a change that's realistic, what would you do? What would you like to see happen to, so that you could say, now it's turned the corner?
Yeah, I'd love to see, and I think we're all going to be judged, so to speak, of our work as we think about investments across the city beyond, for instance, 10 neighborhoods that are being invested in currently, when we know that there's over 150 neighborhoods in the city. So I think as we bring everything to scale, if I had a magic wand, sometimes it's not only just about money, but it's about willingness to work together in ways that we haven't worked together before, when we don't always agree with the way that resources should be invested. I think if I had a magic wand, it would be to maybe mitigate and remove barriers for more conversations, for more equity, for more Detroiters to have access to their own destiny in terms of what they'd like to see for their neighborhoods. That's what I would ask for.
I agree with you. I think that would be fantastic. And in communities across the country, I think that the people that live in these communities should be at the table to have a voice to say how they're developed, how they're reinvested in, and so forth. But anyway, we don't have a magic wand. I wish we did. But I really appreciate you sharing your vision and sharing what you all are doing in Detroit. I think it's great. It's tough work. It's great work that you've done. And I appreciate that you're out there doing it every day.
Absolutely, absolutely. If anyone has any questions or needs connection to resources, feel free to call our office at 313-265-2891. My email, and you can email me directly. I'm very responsive. It's TVIEGLER at lisk.org. So that's TZiegler at lisk.org.
I will put that in the information online when we post the podcast. And I once again, thank you to Harold Ziegler for joining us from Detroit List. I appreciate you being here. And thanks to everyone for listening. This is Open Source with Tony Motley.
Thanks so much, Tony.
Open Source is a co-production of Duet Digital Media and McLaughlin Media.